were cordially invited to a night at the opera.
Started reading this book, and there are sections in it that give instructions to a person who is dead.
I'm especially not afraid to die.
Fingernail scrapings from each finger.
Fine. What about blood samples?
Right, blood samples as well.
Delta Green Killing Field.
In Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana, there is a nondescript hallway with a blue laminate door that looks like it was taken off of a porta potty. It leads to a tragically 70s wood-paneled conference room. The base's skiff. Inside, at the conference table, beneath the faded American flag on the wall, in the padded chairs with the ripped vinyl, and the dead PowerPoint projector sitting in the middle of you. There are three people. One is a tall, square-shouldered, roughly 40-something black man. He gives you a polite smile as he sort of looks expectantly up at a red light that is off on the wall. While he picks his calluses on his hands somewhat apologetically, as if waiting for his cue in a play. Who are the two people sitting across from him?
Michael Kincaid is a 40s, early 50s looking man, glasses, graying hair, extremely fatigued, bags under his eyes, and a nervous thumbing of his fingers on the table in the room without consciously realizing it, as looking more like a man waiting for the executioner to arrive, waiting to hear the bad news.
Yeah, and the bearer of bad news and the executioner is putting a briefcase down on the table. He's a tall, 60-year-old white man in an ill-fitting business suit, pallid, freckled, thinning gray hair that used to be thick and curly, and he too looks exhausted, miserable, with this sort of tinge of impatience and anger as he sits down and looks back at the door and sees the light come on that indicates that the room is secure from every kind of potential eavesdropping. And he turns and looks at Kincaid and takes a breath, sits down, looking kind of schlubby, tired, and says, "All right, Kincaid, what the fuck?"
"Yes, Director Manon, where do you want to begin? We have three agents. I can talk about any of them or the vector, or where it came from or what we're doing with it. I don't know how much of the briefing you read, but
we're here for what sounds like a threat to the program. The details, the op, that's a whole other conversation. I'll review that. We'll have a talk about that. That's not a matter for security," he says, glancing at their quiet companion.
The man puts a callus in his hand and sort of tears it off with his teeth before, putting it in the stack next in front of him, sort of waiting for his turn to talk, and nods.
This operation involved three agents, James Gideon with U.S. Marshals, and then Agent LeBeau, and Stevens with the EPA. Right now, Gideon is in the hospital in Helena being treated. He is under custody, and Agent Stevens escaped arrest and is currently dealing with a source of the vector at the Oakland Pit, which is an EPA Superfund site, and this company Benthic put a vector in there, some sort of fungal sample, and he has some thermite, and he's dealing with it right now. I'm waiting to hear back from him. But
Manon kind of leans forward. His hand's a little jittery, you know. It's like the maybe the off-brand prescription medication that he took earlier is finally kicking in. But he says, look, we need to save the details. The director's taken an interest here. Understand me?
Yes, director.
All right. The real director. My boss. It's fucking Montana. Everything's a disaster here. So, we need to make a couple of decisions. First thing is exposure. What's the status of the containment? Is it squared away? How confident are you and your man putting it into the spread of this thing?
Well, Stevens should be able to get the source of the vector in the pit, but there are people who have been exposed to it at the hospital. I don't know how many civilians were exposed to it because, you know, they brought the infected bodies there for I don't think it only seems to spread through direct contact. It's with an infected source, so there would be necessity of some kind of cleanup there. But I have been thinking about a solution. LeBeau is infected, but did escape custody. He's at our safe house now, and we could pin everything on him as a rogue, someone who has gone postal or is, you know, as a vendetta and is broken and isn't using something to make people sick, you know. And so we could put everything on him, and he's already infected. He's probably, yeah, I don't even know if he's going to live through the night. So we could just have regular authorities come in and quarantine the hospital. I think everybody's it's either at the pit or the hospital. So the pit's being taken care of, and so if we can quarantine the hospital, I think it'll be contained.
Jesus. So you want to burn your own man on this?
He I don't know what got into him, but he shot a cop and didn't kill him in a suburban street, and just with multiple witnesses, and they were just breaking into a house. They could have talked. They failed at the deputy. I don't know what he did. I don't know why he did that. He just started shooting for no reason. There's nothing.
You said this infection hit him. Like he
was exposed. Yeah,
he's got it.
I think he's.
What I'm trying to get exposed at is, do we have a plan B?
He's at the safe house on this base that I've set up. And you know, he stole a cop car to get out of custody. And drove it there. I don't think anyone saw him, but he's just waiting there. He's either, I told him I left some sleeping pills there for him to take so he could calm down. So maybe he took those and he's just knocked out. I don't see a, I don't know.
The man reaches across and puts his hand on yours. He broke the first rule. Didn't he, Kincaid? He got caught?
Yes.
If you That's don't know all it takes. You don't need to say anymore.
I didn't see anything in his jacket that would indicate this behavior. I really didn't think he was... I expect this kind of thing from... You know? I'm...
That's,
I
don't a,
know,
I just, that's a tomorrow problem, yeah. Son. Yeah. I'm here to deal with today's problems.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
It'll be okay. Just calm down. Take a breath.
Okay.
We're going to get you through this.
Yeah.
Manon kind of sags back in his chair and looks between the two of them with a look on his face that doesn't look like he's convinced that everything's going to be okay and we're going to get anybody through this.
Speaking of containment, though, the only other thing I can think of is the company itself, where all of this started from, Benthic, which is an affiliate of March Technologies. So I did not inform the agents about that link, and I don't know what
Manon,
to do.
Manon kind of shakes his head and has this sort of bleak smile on his face. This is, it's family, right? What are you going to do? All right, so, Look, give Branson here the details. You've got agents still in the field. They need to deal with this company. If this is a spinoff of March and it's putting something out into the world, then that's on us. We got to stop it putting something out into the world. I'll take some names and make some calls. Do what I can to smooth some of that over. Yeah, I don't think there's anything to be done about your boy, though.
Maybe he was. Maybe the thing changed his behavior. I don't know, but
we can hope. That's on your guy. Your team too is
Gideon. Get rid of the rest of the
sources, and keep an eye on anybody that might have come in contact with it.
Yes, I will be monitoring them, Gideon and Stevens, a while to make sure that they are not infected. Stevens especially, because he's diving. It's an open, this whole like contaminated pit of sludge left over from copper mining. Dangerous even without that thing in it.
We just need to make it safe enough to make it the EPA's problem.
Yes, but I think if you can, we can pin it on LeBeau. We can we can quarantine the hospital, and that'll be. I'm sorry you had to come out here, Director.
All right, Branson, you have jackets on everyone, so see if there's any loose ends on LeBeau's side. They're going to come back to bite us once this is taken care of.
Hell, I can tie those off.
Yeah. All right. Kincaid, I'm gonna go. We've all got some work to do here.
Yes, sir.
Just remember, our job is we've got to protect all of them. Kind of glances, or sort of nods his head out to the whole wide world beyond the room. To do that, we've got to protect us.
Yes, sir. I understand.
The man gets out a handkerchief and unfolds it fastidiously and dusts a little pile of his dead skin calluses into it before closing it. And says, "It was good meeting you, Mike."
I wish I could say the same.
He holds up the little handkerchief. Be careful not to leave too much of yourself behind in this job. It's easy to do. And then he walks out.
And Kay kind of takes out his own handkerchief and wipes the table down absentmindedly.
Yeah, Manon gets his things together. How's Lisa? Is she hanging in there?
She's a real trooper. She understands. Her sister's up with her right now. I had to come here today. As soon as this is over with, I'll be able to fly back and see her again. She's responding well. That's good.
Manon sort of nods, says, "Well, that's good to hear." As if that's sort of the extent of what empathy he can afford to supply now. Mm-hmm. And says, "Take care of it. You know where to reach me. If anything gets worse."
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he turns around and opens the door, and the little red light, you know, is shuts off again as he leaves it closed, leaves Kincaid alone, and the red light comes back on with just him in the room.
Kincaid finally just remembers to untense and just lets out a very deep and sad sigh.
So coming out of there, Manon joins Branson walking down the hallway, one of these random military base hallways. And Manon kind of looks at Branson as they're walking and says, "What's your read on him?"
Needs to keep a tighter house, but aside from that foible, I think he's got potential as a future asset. There seems to be a pretty convenient narrative waiting for us in that house. Once you're a cop killer, who could blame you for not wanting to go inside? A lot of stuff can happen on the way.
Well, always a silver lining. So they can head out at that point. Hopefully out of Operations Officer Kincaid's life forever. There's no clock on the wall in the meeting room. There's nothing to tick the time down that you can hear. There's only Kincaid, Operations Officer Kincaid, and the program, at least as far as his agents know. His real name? Who knows? We don't need to know. The agents certainly don't need to know. But for now, it's just him in the room, in the silence. The glaring red light that promises security. Staring and thinking and what's on his face? What's in his mind?
Kincaid is thinking back. Scent of potpourri is in his memory. That's the one. It's a scent that he now associates. Something that the house home smells of. He sets it up to make things smell nice for Lisa, especially before he has to leave for work, as because she mentioned once that she liked the smell, and so. He always gets it for her. Probably doesn't even like it anymore. He realizes probably is not that fond of it since he's gotten so much of it over the years. He doesn't really know what else to get her during these times. What she wants is him to be home. He can't.
Lisa is on the back porch watching it rain and putting another blanket on and sort of numbly allowing the Netflix on the TV that Mike set up out there to roll on to the next episode of Kitchen Nightmares, even though she hasn't been appetized for food in longer than she can remember. And she adjusts the knit cap on her skull that her sister's friends at work made her, sort of resigns herself to watch the water bead down the glass and wait for the conversation she knows Mike has been avoiding having with her for the last couple days.
Hi, you all settle up here? Do you need some tea or anything? Reset the potpourri a little bit, but honey, I'm so sorry, but I have to go. There's something that came up, and I have to be on site to deal with it because of, you know, security and all that. They don't have enough people with. Don't worry, your sister's going to be here, not just later, in a couple hours, so I just want to make sure you have everything before I go.
Yeah, I'm good. You're flying out tonight? She's wiping tears from her eyes.
Yeah.
How long you'll be?
Probably just a couple, hopefully just a couple days. This is just, you know, these systems break and they need somebody they trust to fix them. And that always happens to be me.
She takes off the cap and exposes her bald head. Like, you're telling me if something was wrong, right, Mike?
Yeah, of course. Of course I would.
I told you when I got the diagnosis, I came straight home and I told you something was wrong and you'd tell me if something was wrong, right?
Yeah. I mean, things are wrong, but it's a work thing. And you know, I can't talk about that. It's, you know, Mike is trying to look her in the eyes and it's really hard.
She shakes her head and shakes the thoughts away and goes, I'm sorry. I just, the new drugs that Dr. Phillips has me on, they just, you know what they do to my mood and I haven't been sleeping. I'm sorry. You read all of these stories, these horror stories about husbands and they just leave the second someone gets sick and you have nothing to do but sit here and think about it. And I know you're a good man. I know you're loyal. And that you would never leave anybody who's in trouble behind or anything like that. I know. I'm just sorry. It's hard sometimes.
I know.
Andrea will take care of everything. She's doing a great job. I got my hat. I got my shows. I'm going to be good. You focus on work. It's going to be okay.
I will. Okay. I love you, and I really wish I could.
I know, baby. I know. Yeah. I love you too.
I love you too. Goodbye. I'll call you when I get off the plane. I would never leave you. I don't deserve anyone. I.
It's okay, baby. I'm sorry. It's on me. It's on me.
It's not. It's unfair. It's unfair to both of us. But we. We just, this is the best. That's too dark.
I know you would never choose this. You would never choose.
No, I wouldn't. Now that I know, I would have chosen a different career. But those recruiters on the college campuses, man, they really get you going in these career tracks. Anyway, good. I love you so much. He does kiss her on the cheek and. Awkwardly embraces her while standing up, and
she goes back to watching men scream at each other across a stove with the sound off.
I have a question as a sort of a handler question here.
Mm. Yeah,
about Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
When it's just her again, is anything on her in her demeanor indicate whether or not she knows how full of shit he is?
Yeah, because once she hears the caller pull out, she turns off the TV and just stares at the rain for the rest of the day.
So Kincaid is still in that conference room,
mm-hmm.
thinking, still alone, thinking of how that last conversation, he got his exhausted, sick, cancer-riddled wife to apologize for him leaving. And that's how you lose a point from a bond. How long does it take Kincaid to collect himself and get up and get back to work? Where does he go first?
It takes him a good 10 minutes to realize he's just thinking about that and not, and he has a lot of shit to do. And then he rushes out gets to making calls about you know, a wellness check on, or he goes first to get the, to see if, Branson has sent the, all clear sign, whatever method they use to, and once he receives that, then he starts setting up the frame up of doctoring evidence and, you know, setting up, you know, faked notes from LeBeau about getting revenge on his bosses at the EPA by faking an attack and, you know, that kind of thing. And, yeah, he is, it takes, another couple of days, but.
So I guess we can, I think as we're looking at Kincaid working on a new document on his computer that claims to be some kind of a manifesto memorandum from Agent LeBeau.
Welcome to Delta Green Killing Field. This is Sentinels of Twilight, a scenario in the Delta Green Handler's Guide. And we have three agents here about to embark on the mission. But before we get into the scenario, let's introduce the players. We have a returning player, Jacqueline Brick, who played Lydia Key in Last Things Last. And Jacqueline, if for people who haven't listened to that episode, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure thing. Hi, my name is Jacqueline Brick. I also go by Jax Romana. My pronouns are she, they, and fae. I am a writer, editor, game designer, doer of all things game.
Excellent. And then we have two new agents, the first of which is familiar to listeners of my other podcast, Role Playing Public Radio. It's Bridget, the most
innovative. Is that why we're not doing the cold open?
Yeah. Yeah, it's for, this is for a different podcast.
I was like, where's the Hey, I'm Ross? I was going to do the Hey, I'm Ross bit. I was like, maybe I'll just talk over him and do the Hey, I'm Ross bit.
Yes, but this is our most innovative GM at RPPR. Bridget, please tell the listeners who aren't familiar a little bit about you, I guess.
Yeah, I'm an award-winning game designer and industry-leading author. That's what I put on my business cards. It sounds really good. I've been on RPPR a lot, so if you want to go listen to stuff I've been to, there's the Bridget tag on RPPR. Yeah.
Yeah, and most recently, you were in Cointract Island, our Fate Core survival horror campaign. And
wait, how many awards do I have to win to get my own RPPR tag?
Well, you already have the tag. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, and we're technically all award winners because we all won the Diana Jones Award for actual
play. Go team.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yep. Yes, and that's our third player, Winter.
Hello. I'm Winter. I use she, her pronouns. You may also know me as Lydia. I use both pretty interchangeably. And honestly, I don't do much outside of playing games.
All right, I'm going to steal your spotlight because I forgot to add my own pronouns, which are also she, her.
Mm-hmm.
But I did forget my own intro, so I'm using yours.
Well, all worked out. Yeah, this is the weekend. So as we begin the game, it is the weekend of the 4th of July, leave 2017. All of you are near or in California, and for the purposes of this operation, because you're the ones who are closest when the call went out. And so we'll begin with our recurring player, Lydia Key, who is an analyst for the State Department. You may be stationed normally in D.C. As an analyst, but you were in California when you got the call to go on your next mission. But before that, what happened to you after the operation in the scenario Last Things Last? What was Lydia up to?
Lydia did not punch her case officer. She tried really hard. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. She's still angry about that. She went home to Washington, D.C. She spent some time with her girlfriend, who I thought she had a girlfriend listed on here. She does not. That might be another character I have. Weird.
If you want to change one of your names, your bonds to that,
That happens sometimes when you come home from a mission. You find you don't have a girlfriend.
Well,
anymore.
She, yeah, fair enough. We'll say she had a girlfriend and then she lost a girlfriend.
But, okay.
She spent time with, we will then say she spent time with her mentor, Dr. Kelly Bardlin, mm-hmm. who is one of the professors of international relations at Georgetown University. And she also spent time training up her firearms.
Okay. So that is a home pursuit. So if you want to do that, that will reduce one of your bonds by 1 point as you let those responsibilities lapse. But then you then make a test of that skill. And if you fail, you gain 1d10 points in that skill. So,
all right. Well, since I am spending time with one of my bonds, I would like to keep the score at where it is.
Okay. It's,
you know.
But well, I will reduce one of your other. Yeah. So which one?
I will reduce my other two bonds to 10 from 11.
You only have to reduce one bond.
Oh, way. Well, then I will reduce my mom's bond.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. I never call her anymore.
All right. So go ahead and roll your firearms. And if you
if I fail,
you gain 1d10 points in that skill.
Okay. I fail.
Okay. So go ahead and add 1d10 points. What would that, and let me know what your roll.
So I rolled a 7, so that'll bring me up to 47 in firearms.
Okay, very good. So yeah, a lot of time on the range, getting a lot more comfortable drawing a firearm and using it. And you train with several different weapons, not just handguns, but rifles, shotguns. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more familiarity with just all the weapons a civilian can get their hands on. But you are in California. When you get a call.
Why am I in California?
You could be there for a work conference. It could be for a, maybe you're called over for an event to translate.
She's a very good translator. So translation works fine.
Okay. Yeah. So you were in there for State Department work translating. Maybe they didn't have enough people at one of the facilities there and they needed, you know, just routine work.
Right.
You get a call from Michael Kincaid.
No.
Yes. And he says, I'm sorry, Agent Key, but, we need you. There's something happening in Yosemite National Park. You are one of the closest agents we have.
You've got to be shitting me.
No, I am not. I will give you full briefing, at this office. It's outside of Sacramento. Was only a few hours away from the park, and it is urgent. This is
well. I appreciate that you started with an apology. Am I getting reimbursed for gas?
Yes. This will be. I have been working. This will be beneficial to your career.
You say that, but you set up a hospital in a fucking storage shed last time we spoke.
Yes, for security reasons.
For security reasons, of course. Because the you store it was the most secure location.
It was. No one found out about it. And you...
Anyone ever told you that you're fucking insufferable?
Yes, but it gets the job done. All right? We need your help, and... You will get that next assignment that you've been looking at. I do know you've been looking at postings and have made your indications of which one you'd want the most. And I can make that happen.
I am not being posted at a U-Haul.
I'm talking about your day job.
You can't even take a fucking joke. You know what? Fine. I'll be there. Have the reimbursement ready or I will try to punch you again.
All right. Thank you. So you hang up. And make your way to Sacramento. And next up, we have Agent Sev March. Tell us about Agent March. What does she look like, and what kind of background does she have?
So, Agent Sev March used to be involved in, I assume, the United States military, because we're in the United States.
Yeah, say U.S. Army. Yeah.
So these days, she wears a suit and tie. She doesn't wear it particularly well. It looks a little bit more like it's wearing her. She smokes a lot. She drinks when she has the occasion. Because when she was part of the Army, she was part of a test group that dealt with some supernatural affairs. The idea was to create a military force that was incapable of suffering casualties, right? Because at around 10% casualties, a group of soldiers will rout. And at 17% casualties, they're completely broken and you can't use them anymore for anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's guaranteed to have PTSD at that point or be so severely injured that you send them back home. You're spending a lot of government money to ensure their health care, rehabilitate them to work in society. And it's also really, really bad for optics. Like, that's how you get worse.
Sure is.
That's how people be like, maybe this forever war is maybe not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So a unit that can't suffer casualties would be great. So she was involved in an operation called the Labor of Dogs. And it was to test a ritual that, surprisingly enough, had efficacious effects. Like, you could take anyone, and as long as they weren't dead, if they were one step away from death's door, you could instantly heal all of their injuries, and they'd be fine. The problem is, when you have a unit that suffers 100% casualties, and then 200% casualties, and then 4,000% casualties, emotionally, they no longer become capable of performing tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what she was up to before this.
So, Agent March, you know that that experiment was run through a company, a front company called, that was connected to some other company called March Technologies. Yeah, so I imagine it ended badly, but obviously you made it out intact after seeing some shit.
Yeah.
Gluing
people together every day.
Yeah, so since then you've been in part of this nebulous network of people in the U.S. military industrial complex that know that something, that there are things, reality is not what it is advertised. There are things that we just don't understand. And there is a large group of them that want to keep the lid on this kind of thing. You are paid as a private security contractor, kind of like with your medical skills, you know, to stay on, provide sight. Your day job is rather boring, but occasionally you get called up to go deal with something. You're somewhere in California and you get the call, and you know, it's sent through an appropriate encrypted message. You hear a man's voice. Hello, my name is Michael Kincaid. I'll be your case officer for this. You need to come to this address in Sacramento for a briefing to take place in Yosemite National Park immediately after the briefing. I'll provide all the details there, but we need your medical expertise and, field experience, Agent March. So, yeah, you get the call.
Do I have to drive a car?
You can fly. It's up to you whether it's close enough for you to drive or if you have to grab a plane to get to Sacramento. So
once I hit the ground in Sacramento, do I have to drive a car?
They will have one of you will have to drive a car. He will have a rented an SUV for the three of you.
Okay.
But you don't have to be the driver if you don't want to. Like, one of them can drive.
Okay. I accept your terms.
All right. You begin to grab your go bag and head out. And finally, we have Winter, who is playing. Are you keeping the name?
I'm just keeping the name.
All right. Jane Worley. Tell us about Jane.
She is a Fish and Wildlife Service special agent. She's been in a lot of places in the country working on various special projects. And on one of those, she maybe saw some things she oughtn't have. And maybe a little shakier than she used to be.
So, the Fish and Wildlife Service actually is a, you know, federal agency that investigates crimes related to, you know, wildlife, especially like people who poach animals, people who traffic in animal parts. And you had some guys under surveillance in the woods one night. And you thought that there was a weird looking tree in the forest, and then the tree moved, and then it ate them, for lack of a better term. And
yeah, it wasn't a pretty sight. And I am not proud to say that I just left.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're still alive. But you said enough to a supervisor that you were approached and told that there are things like that out there. And wouldn't you like to do something about them? And we can help.
Oh, sure would I. So. I think right now, given the 4th of July weekend, she is on vacation with her girlfriend in Southern California.
Yep. So yeah, you get the call and you know the routine. You know that it's coming from the organization. You answer and it's like, hello, my name is Michael Kincaid. I'm going to be your case officer for an operation. You need to meet me at Sacramento tomorrow morning at this address in order to get your briefing. It'll take place in Yosemite National Park. So bring appropriate equipment. It should only take 1 or 2 days at most, but you need to leave immediately. And your expertise in particular will be invaluable.
Of course, it's on my vacation. All right.
Yeah. What kind of excuse do you make to your girlfriend?
I'm just going to be fairly honest that work called and it's an emergency and I have to.
Does this happen a lot?
Skip out on our plans. Yeah, I think it does.
See,
and I don't think it's a good thing.
No, your girlfriend certainly does not think it is a good thing. She is, but she's gotten better at hiding her disappointment.
Oh
no, she's not. Your human is 10. Go ahead and give me a human roll.
Oof.
Oh, I'm just going to use that roll I told you I was going to use, which is a 99.
Yeah, yeah, no. Oh. She's so proud of you. You're definitely doing the right thing.
Yeah. Oh, yep. This definitely is not a failing relationship. Everything's going great.
You're making the right choice.
Making the right career decisions.
Mm-hmm. We were just talking about losing girlfriends or coming back from missions.
Yeah.
Weird that would be the case.
Amazing.
So, yeah, but both Agent Worley and Agent March, because they've seen some shit in the field, they can bring more in. Worley, yeah, you've invested in a Barrett 50 caliber rifle and quite a bit of ammunition for it. Yeah, it's this thing will. You told your girlfriend, well, was it for target shooting or for bears?
Oh, she doesn't know about that.
Okay. So yeah, you swing by the storage unit to grab that on your way. And
yep.
Yeah. Agent March, you have a, Kevlar armor and an illegally modified, assault rifle, that can fire bursts. So.
Yeah, I think she's just got a under her jacket. She's just got a ceramic vest.
Yeah, so that'll provide a lot of protection in the field. And Agent March also. Yeah, so the three of you.
Does Lydia not have anything?
Lydia, you do have a handgun
or Agent Key. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Agent Key, you do have your handgun. You bring that with you at all times now. But true. You spent a lot of time on the range. But you're not like from a military background.
That's true. I am
or
not
a law enforcement background. So, oh, by the way, you also have 3 points in unnatural now from your exposure. Sweet. To the thing in the septic tank. So you, was there, I mean, I guess you could bring additional equipment. Like what kind of. What would be
something
you
would carry
in your go bag? Yeah.
I like the idea that she just does not go anywhere without her service issue pistol.
Well, it's not service issue. It's definitely your own, but you've sure. Delta Green, they have some, they're able to get you a, well, actually you can't carry it on plane, but you can carry and check luggage. So yeah, you.
Sweet.
Yeah. They even offer you a gun that doesn't have, that can't be traced to you if you want one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, you have a handgun that's not registered to anyone. So yeah, you can just throw that in a lake anytime you're done using it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Good for me.
Yeah. But yeah, if there was something else, some sort of piece of civilian gear that you would bring with you at all times, you could bring that.
I mean, voice recorder.
Voice recorder. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you all have flashlights, appropriate weather gear, or clothing, boots and that kind of thing. So yeah, we cut to Sacramento the next day. It's an anonymous office in a, office park that you were, Michael, Kincaid was waiting at the door to let you in. It has a key card access normally. He leads you into a windowless or into a, conference room. There's probably says this is, I apologize for the short notice, but this is a very time sensitive operation. This is we go with the Operation Fulminate as the codename for this operation. You must go to Ranchera Falls Trailhead Ranger Station in the Hetch Hetchy region of Yosemite National Park. I will provide a map. It's about a 3.5 hour drive. I've already secured a rented SUV in a front company's name, so that cannot be traced to you if you lose the SUV for whatever reason. And you are to investigate the unexpected recovery of a 6-year-old child who was found wandering naked in a field by a ranger early Saturday, yesterday morning. The child identified himself as Brandon McGill of Topeka, Kansas, and asked to call his parents. After a brief conversation, the parents were beside themselves with confusion and tearful excitement and said they would depart for Yosemite immediately. They arrived this morning at 6:30 a.m. and the supervising park ranger contacted the FBI. He texted photos of Brandon McGill, which matched them with earlier photos. And this is what
much earlier.
Yes. Brandon McGill disappeared from that region in 1980 at Aww. 6 years old. And
you're giving us actual information this time, Kincaid.
Yes, I will. I gave you all the information I had available last time.
Horseshit. But that's so nice.
Yes.
Are you flirting with me?
No, I really do want you all to do the, you understand, I really do want you to succeed. I don't do this out of, because there is a kid who has been gone for 40 years and, or he should be over 40 right now. And he still looks identical to when he disappeared.
I don't actually believe you give a rat's ass about us, given what mission you sent me on with the customs officer and the environmental scientist last time. That's very nice of you. Thank you. Continue.
Yes. Yes.
Is she going to be like this the whole time?
Yes. Hi, I'm Agent Key. I was pulled on for a mission, several weeks ago by this asshole who didn't tell me that members of our organization were necrotizing their wives.
Well, that was from the previous iteration of this organization. We lost records. We did not keep track of them back, you know, well, and we were better at record keeping.
And Steph Marsh, sorry to hear about that.
So we have a, there's an FBI agent embedded with us in San Francisco who found out about this and has been delaying a response. I have been working with her to come up with a cover story in that there is an interagency task, a multi-agency task force investigating human trafficking. In this case, Agent Worley here would be the lead because it takes place in national parks. Lydia, you would be there as a translator just in case.
Sure.
And Agent March would be there to provide security. That is your cover story. That is the best I could do. And the FBI, thanks to Agent Sands and the FBI, we're delaying official response, but you need to locate the child, see if it is actually Brandon McGill, determine what, if there's an unnatural threat in the area, remove the unnatural threat if there is one, and whatever, make whatever outcome happens entirely mundane. Once you figure out what to do with the kid, we can take it and hand it off to another agency, or if it is the kid and they have no memory, whatever your assessment of what happens to the kid is what we'll do. But a kid who's been missing for decades and appears to be the exact same age, plus this region does have, I've done some initial research, and there does seem to be a history of people disappearing in this region, in this particular park, in this very, very specialized area. So this could be part of a larger pattern. You have 3.5 hours of a car ride to get there. Try and beat the parents. Make an assessment, find out what's going on. But that is all. This is last minute. You three were geographically the closest to field agents. So are there any other questions?
It's okay. I didn't want to work with you either.
I understand. So, but yeah, there are some people who we don't know what that, if it even is a child, or if it's something pretending to be a child, or if it's a child that's just experienced missing time. We don't know. And that's your job, is to find out. So, right. Yeah.
Well, I drove last time, so if y'all want to get in the SUV, Kincaid, are you coming?
All right. Also, here is, I have put a paramedic bag, food, water, flashlights, and a satellite phone with my number, and I will stay up, respond as quickly as I can. Now, I did get, according to weather reports, a storm is moving in the area. Good luck.
Wait, did you offer to drive Agent March? Or was that...
No, that was me.
Oh, I apologize.
Yeah. So, yeah, the three of you get in, load your go bags into the vehicle. Yeah, you do. It is about a 3.5 hour trip. There is, I can give you another map if you want. So, if you look in the One Shots channel, there are a couple maps to look at of the same area. And this is not an actual place. You can just look it up on the Google if you want to.
Tweet.
Yeah. And so you're just outside city limits of Sacramento. And so you just jump on the highway and head that way. So Agent Worley is driving. You can talk, you can plan, or people with the other two agents, you have phones, probably a laptop. So you could do other, some history or bureaucracy or, occult, to gain information.
Cool.
So, Agent Key.
Yeah.
Translation, huh?
Well, clearly they need me if the child comes back speaking Cantonese.
Oh, I just meant like, you know, what do you do for your day job? Because,
Department of State.
Oh, yeah. I got a sister that's like a diplomat aide or whatever.
Oh, so. Yeah? An attaché?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think, I mean, we're not super close after the last, you know, whatever, but
yeah,
it's really interesting stuff.
Also, I'm mostly like that with Kincaid. I'll try not to be an asshole with you guys unless you're an asshole to me, because, like, you know.
I do appreciate that. I
work in diplomacy. I like to pride myself on actually talking to people sometimes.
I'll keep that in mind. If we find the kid, that's all yours.
Yeah, I have some ideas. If they want to lean into the human trafficking angle, that's definitely like the most sensationalist angle and the one that's going to get the most eyeballs on it and make people stop considering anything else. We can be like, oh yeah, you know, his ancestor or his father or would be father at this point because he'd be 46. Got kidnapped and like told his kids stories of what his life was like. So like if the kid ever managed to escape, you know, that's my rough outline that I'm working with right now.
You know, there's a lot of like, communes and stuff out in the middle of nowhere that brainwash people and all that kind of stuff.
That's a good point.
It's California. I'm sure we could find something close by.
Oh yeah. 100%. So what do you do?
Oh, me? This, mostly.
Congratulances?
It's, you know, it is what it is.
It ain't much, but it's terrifying work.
All right. I think you just get a laugh from the driver's seat.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Fish and Wildlife Service. So, lots of people doing shit they shouldn't in a federal park.
Agent Key points out the window to a starling murmuration. How's the wildlife? Is that illegal?
If I don't see it, it's not my problem.
Oh,
so have you seen the corpse god?
The what?
Excuse me?
God, it's like a big deer. It's got a bunch of meat. But you haven't seen the corpse god?
I haven't seen the corpse god.
Well.
What did we just say? If I haven't seen it, it's not my problem?
I think that's pretty...
I guess it's not your problem.
Yeah?
Yeah, no. Both of you did see Agent Worley load in a very long black case.
For a big
rifle. Yeah.
Great.
Among some other...
Amazing.
Actual, like, outdoors equipment.
I'm sorry, my brain is heavily farting right now. So it's Agent March and Agent Worley, correct?
Yes.
I high five Agent March because we've never seen the Corpse God.
Oh, I've seen the Corpse God. Agent Whirly hasn't.
Oh yes. My God. I'm going to. Okay, I'm so sorry.
Let me just.
I'm going to high five Agent Whirly because we haven't seen the Corpse God.
Is it Whirly like that? Agent Whirly?
Whirly, I think.
Yeah. Whirly, yeah.
Hold on. Can I get just a quick recap? Agent Whirly is driving and Agent March is in the back seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Cool. And I can either be in the back seat making peanut gallery sounds or I can be in the passenger seat. Either one's fine.
we'll say you're in shotgun.
Okay, cool.
And so the three of you drive on.
I would love to make a sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I am probably driving fairly recklessly.
All right, yeah. You need to beat the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honey, there's a big storm coming.
Agent Key, go ahead and give me a history check.
Hell yeah, I'm going to do a history check on communes in the area.
Okay.
Boom, boom. Let's see if I remember if I have any history. I do. I have a 40 in history. Let's roll it.
Okay.
I literally just barely fail. Okay. I got a 41.
You don't find anything about communes, but this area does have a history of weirdness. Like I said, even on a fail check, you would find out information about Brandon McGill's disappearance because it made the news.
Mm-hmm.
There were searches, including one with over 100 personnel and two helicopters.
Ooh.
You don't get all the details of it, but the FBI became involved after an eyewitness claimed to have seen a man in black clothing following the McGills down the trail. Two independent witnesses volunteered this information. One described the man as tall and pale. The other described it only as a figure in black. Yeah, so, and there's also a lot of children disappearing in this park.
Can I make a shot in the dark on a natural roll? See if I've heard of what that thing is.
Oh, no, like
two?
Nice. Okay.
All right. With a two, there are a lot of possible suspects. Without information, there's not a lot to go on, but you can think of things you've heard whispered of several types of entities that are experts at hiding in the forest and preying on travelers and hikers and that kind of thing. In particular, there would be... I'll keep that in mind. If you get information, you'll be able to corroborate that. So,
I got a short list.
Yeah, you have a short list, but if you get like a name from something or a symbol or something like that, I'll let you use that success on that.
Okay, I'll hold on to it.
Yeah,
Lydia's Agent Key is just going to start looking up Slenderman and instances of Slenderman in Yosemite.
Well, this predates. This all Slenderman is only a couple years old.
Yeah, she's still gonna look it up.
Okay, yeah. This goes back decades. 24 children have vanished in Yosemite over the last 40 years. You can give me an occult check.
Cool.
And so can you, Agent March, if you want to look into it.
Okay. I get a 16. So.
Okay. So,
I feel.
Okay. So Agent March, you pick up some similarities of all these disappearances. Bad weather follows disappearances. The same thing. So there's a pattern. Dogs could not find any scent of Brandon McGill. And then when lost children are found in general, it is often miles from where they were lost. So they usually have to do a large search radius. But obviously they're 24 kids are they're just entirely missing. Those that are recovered have high temperatures and are withdrawn and disoriented. The disappearances almost always occur late afternoon or early dusk. Brandon McGill vanished at 4:33 p.m. And the disappearances tend to occur in areas overgrown with huckleberries. The Devil's Chair, marked on your map, is an area covered in huckleberry bushes. So,
all right. Well, I've got good news and bad news.
All right.
So the bad news is, what was the dude's name? Kincaid?
Yeah.
The handler, yeah.
The bad news is Kincaid has sent us on kind of a goose chase.
Wow,
I looked
really?
Up all the disappearances, and there's not going to be any tracks. We're going to be hit by an awful storm, and the search radius is going to be so big that we may not have even bothered. But I do have one lead.
All right.
Places with huckleberries. It's been a while since I've done any kind of recreation, so I'm going to hope that our fish and game wildlife officer knows what a huckleberry
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
It concerns me that what you said was, it's been a while since I've done any recreation. Are you okay?
Are any of us?
I mean, I like to think I'm relatively okay. I'm just bitchy to Kincaid.
Well, that's good, though, right? I mean, that's human contact, a nice relationship. You remember each other's names.
I like to think I'm pretty okay.
That's good.
Right, you're scaring me.
Staring into
okay.
the middle distance.
Do you mind if I smoke?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was about to ask.
I don't smoke. Just roll down the windows.
Hell yeah.
Sorry, it really is a terrible habit. I know I should stop.
You know that'll kill you someday.
I hope so.
Here's some right about the Devil's Chair, by the way. It is a real place. Yeah, a hilly, mountainous, you know, arid region. So yeah, this is, you know, late summer, midsummer, so it is quite hot and dry this year. Yeah. Yes, you spend the hours driving, talking, getting to know each other a little better. There are a lot of, you know, you look into there are legends of yeah, did anybody make an occult? You made the occult check, right? So
yeah, I made the occult check.
Yeah, there is some more information about you do hear were some information about like legends of giants of you know, obviously like Bigfoot, or like there's just reports of these kind of things being linked. To a degree that like when a child disappears, people often see these kind of mysterious figures in the area. Yeah, there's not a lot known about them. There's a lot of theories about them, obviously. But
then there's a big yeah. storm rolls through and nobody can find anything.
Yeah. So the right. kid, the thing is different about this case is that the kid has been found after such a long period of time and he's the same age. So
whoever picked him up, are they just waiting at the trailhead?
Yeah. They according to the rangers at the station at the park called the FBI, and then the FBI slowed everything down to get Delta Green involved, to get you involved, and so they're keeping the kid at the station because he was only found yesterday.
Okay.
And yeah, you just have to assess the kid and see if there's a threat in the area. So
all right. So probably talk to the kid and do a little bit of a hike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's mm-hmm. not bad. It could be worse.
Mm-hmm. So the three of you pull in as, you know, you thunder rumbles in the distance. It is heavily overcast. It is going to rain any moment, maybe an hour, maybe a minute. But it is definitely... It's you can all smell the storm in the air, you know, but the you look around to Agent Worley. It is you see California black oak, ponderosa pine, cedar and white fir, and some occasional giant sequoia trees. The area has exposed rock faces, dirt and scrub grasses, which seem very desert like in the summer. Small bushes cluster mm-hmm. next to the trees, Oregon grape, Sierra coffeeberry, gooseberry, pygmy rose. There are large open areas with only low shrubs, often screened by larger windbreak providing trees. It would be hard to spot a person in the distance in this kind of cover. But there is a parking lot by the trailhead station. The trailhead station is actually a very large building, two stories you can see. There's some couple backpackers going in and out. There's a couple, you know, Jeeps, quad runners, parked there. And, yeah, that this is sort of You can tell there's some backpackers in for the weekend, some a park ranger going inside the station as you're pulling up. I would assume your game plan is simply march in and hello, we're here to, from the government. We're here to help. But you don't have to. That is up to you.
I didn't have any other plans.
That was my
plan. Someone else does.
Yeah. So you go in there. At the front, you talk to park ranger. Let's see here, Galagos. You know, she says, "Oh, hi. I'm just call me Tamika. How can I help you all?"
I'm Agent Worley with the Fish and Wildlife Service. We're here about the kid.
Oh yeah, I just got a message from the FBI saying that there's some sort of task force about this kind of thing, which we'd not heard anything about that. Yeah, let me get my boss. Hey, Doug, heavily tan guy walks in. You know, they're wearing the park ranger uniform. Obviously, spends a ton of time outdoors. He's like, "Hi, I'm Ranger Kina. I'm in charge of the station." We're just waiting for the parents. Apparently, they're on their way, but they got a call saying they were delayed by something. I don't think they're going to be able to make it tonight. I think we already closed off the road. Just warning people about coming in at this point, because God, this looks like there's going to be a big storm. I hope you all are comfortable bunking out here for the night, because I don't think you're going to make it back to any hotel or anything.
Yeah, certainly about not. That, I think I've got some information from my friend out of the weather service that it's going to be a little bit bigger than that. Is it possible if you can start sending people home, like a little bit stronger than just discouraging?
Oh, I mean, it'll be a bad storm, but it's not, as long as the dam doesn't, and the dam's fine. Like, we're not gonna have anything to worry about. They'll be wet, and they can come into the. We got room for everybody here, but we probably got a couple dozen, hikers back here. What do you think, Tamika? Oh, like 30? Oh no, it's probably closer to 40. But anyways, they're just scattered around. You don't have to worry about them. We're not exactly advertising, Brandon's little appearance to them. So he's off. We're keeping an eye on the poor boy.
There's a lot of people we're gonna have to disappear.
Yeah. So Yeah. Well, I mean, they're scattered around the entire park, or this region of the park, so there may not. Yeah. What are they going to see? Fine. Yeah. So
I don't know, Ross. What are they going to see?
Yeah.
Maybe some nice lightning.
Yeah. So the
maybe some birds.
Yeah. So it sounds like
lots of water.
Can we have Agent Key go talk to the kid, and then we'll go talk to the FBI agent?
Well, the FBI agent's in San Francisco, but you could talk to the...
Oh, I thought there was a guy on site.
No, they've just been calling in to run interference for you. But Agent Tamika said, "Yeah, I found the kid. If you need a statement." So Agent Key, you're led into a room that has some toys and a little plastic chair that's obviously meant as kind of a daycare kind of room for kids that are basically a place to keep kids that are lost. This kind of keeps happening,
right?
In the park.
Weird.
Yeah.
Wild how that happens.
You can give me a human check.
Sure. I have 60 in human, and I rolled a 39.
Okay. Yeah, he physically looks like a normal boy, around 6 years old, but like he is just idly fiddling with a little plastic toy. His eyes are downcast. He's very quiet. He is very withdrawn. So whatever happened to him was something. Yeah, he's still processing something that has happened to him. He doesn't say anything as you come in. So
hey, bud.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Lydia. What's yours?
Brandon.
Yeah. You know, I heard about a really famous kid named Brandon.
Okay.
Yeah? Do you know this story?
No.
No, there was this kid named Brandon, and everybody loved him, and then he disappeared. Can you believe that?
Oh.
And nobody ever gave up hope looking for him. Everyone just kept looking for him. And his mommy and daddy were really, really worried about him. And then one day he came back. And they weren't expecting that. Because, see, Brandon had been gone for a long time.
Okay. You can roll Persuade with a plus 20 bonus.
Sweet, thanks. My persuasion is 44. And I rolled a 42. So there we go. Okay. With a plus 20 bonus, it's 64. So I rolled a 42.
So it takes you a while, but you can tell that he is more comfortable around you. This will take some time. So you can think about like what you want to do with that. Like, do you want to ask him questions? Do you just kind of want to assess him?
I'm starting off by assessing him.
Okay.
What I really want is for him to start telling me what happened of his own accord. I want him to think it's his idea.
Okay.
Because giving kids agency in this in situations like this is really, really imperative, and a lot of adults don't do that.
Yeah. That's true. Give me an alertness check.
Cool. So my alertness is, do I have any alertness? I think I do. Yes, I have an alertness.
I've never seen Delta Green send someone this competent.
Right?
I got a 15.
All right. Yeah. With a 15, you do spot something. He's kind of leaned over and you see a green symbol on the back of his neck. And
is it a triangle?
It is a square. With like what looks like a stylized ram's head.
Oh God, not Delta Rhombus, my arch nemesis.
It's
no.
I love handouts.
Oh, handouts. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I made a funny Delta Rhombus joke.
No, I know.
Oh, I'm so sad. Okay. Iggy.
That is an approximation of what it looks like.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Tattooed onto the back of his neck.
Hey, bud. Can I get you to hold your head forward a little further for me?
He does. Yeah.
You got something on the back of your neck here.
Mm-hmm.
Can I look at it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm asking him.
Oh, he just, okay.
All right. I'm going to take a picture of it with my phone and send it to Kincaid.
Okay. Let's see. Do any of you have archaeology? I don't.
No, but I do. I have been hanging on to that unnatural rule.
Yeah. Well, this is not. You could use that if you want to. So, yeah, you. Yeah. So, Adrian March, you actually recognize that is being very similar to in terms of it. It reminds you of the Aztec, like symbols, like their language. You actually identify that as the character for boy. It's not identical, but it's like very similar.
So he's kind of like he's just been labeled.
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna text that back to Agent Key.
Yeah.
Don't like that at all. Oh boy. Well,
this takes you a little while to do. So, Agent Worley, was there anything you wanted to do while Key is interviewing Brandon?
I was basically just gonna ask all of the very intricate details from Tamika.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. She tells you
and just go over it several times.
I was patrolling the Huckleberry Field near the reservoir. It's, you know, probably half a mile from Devil's Chair. I was just looking for garbage, really, just, you know, kind of a basic thing. He was coherent. He was very dirty, like just covered in dirt and naked. And so I covered him up. He said his name was Brandon McGill. He wanted to know where his parents were. I'd never heard of that. I remember every kid who goes missing in our park, and this obviously didn't happen on my watch.
Is it local dirt?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, but like, we had a couple of small caves. It reminded me of that. Like, yeah, cave dirt. Really, little different than the surface.
If I got you a map, could you mark the caves on it for me?
I was about to ask the same thing.
Yeah, they're not very big, but yeah, there are. Let's see here.
Can people go into them? Like, do you do tours? I mean, I know
some of them you can, some of them you can't. Yeah, so let's see here. There are none nearby. None in the immediate vicinity, but like Yosemite's big, right? Like,
are there any near Devil's Chair?
No, not that I know of, but I mean, maybe we missed something. So I took him to the station. You know, he didn't recognize my cell phone. We got on. I figured out what his parents' phone number were. They hadn't changed it in apparently all this time. Landline people, and yeah, they were back home in Kansas, and they were shocked. And I remember the call. They were just, you could hear a pin drop when they heard his voice, and then like they're just screaming and crying and like they just overwhelming. I can't imagine. And they should be here to, well, probably not tonight because of the weather, but definitely tomorrow morning.
I'm gonna text Agent Key.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking to Brandon, it'd be cool if you could try and establish like if he really is from 40 years ago, like asking what his favorite movie is, who his favorite Disney characters are.
That is a brilliant idea. I will absolutely do that. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that you don't have to roll for. You've established his trust and he's happy to talk. I mean, it's not the thing that's obviously scaring him. So yeah, he's happy, more easily able to talk about those things. So yeah, he went missing in 1980. So it was most popular child's movie of 1980. probably, I don't know if E.T. was out yet or not. Probably not.
Hold on, I'm going to do some quick Googling.
Yeah, so, but yeah, his pop culture references are entirely appropriate for someone from 1980. Yeah, and you made your human check. He is being totally truthful and knows about as much as a six-year-old would about those things at the appropriate. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably going to be like, probably just have seen Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's exciting.
So yeah, you can. Yeah, this is extremely.
I'll talk to him about Luke Skywalker. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, Lydia, this is like, you could not coach a kid to do this. Like,
yeah.
Unless you totally immerse them, unless you were
right,
unless you had cut them out from the world and like put them in a bubble and that was all they knew. That like you can't fake this level of sincerity.
Right.
And so yeah, it's. So this takes a while, you know, another like half an hour. So you've been talking to the kid about an hour, and he's getting a little tired because this is still a lot, apparently, for him. Yeah, Tamika tells you that, you know, since then we've kept the kid here. We made sure there's always people there with him, you know, that he trusted. He likes me. He likes everybody at the station, but he's very quiet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're just keeping a lid on things, waiting for his parents or I guess you to show up. Care to tell me what this is about? Like, what's the deal with this kid? So Tamika's asking you, Agent Worley.
Mm-hmm.
So you can give me an N times five check if you want to have an idea of like,
yeah. Okay.
Do we want to just go with the story that we think there's a, like a cult commune?
Oh yeah.
Nearby.
That's just, yeah. That's okay. A good idea.
Yeah.
It's right, one, that might actually be possible, but mm-hmm. two, it's easy to explain.
Yeah, so you've worked out some on your car ride over. You worked out some details about that.
Yeah,
You kind of like we're not sure. You're hedging your bets a lot, but like there is this group, and they're doing this stuff, and they're making the kids think they're, you know, someone else. We don't know why, and you know, it's really weird. But yeah, so you're already kind of seeding the doubt giving a plausible. A story,
mm-hmm.
or how could this happen? And that's when the first, you know, thunder and lightning like hits the area. Like it's a window rattling thunder and very bright lightning. So, yeah, you were at this point a backpacker comes in, an older woman. She is, you know, wearing a raincoat. It's like, whew, boy. Hey, Tamika, you know, I don't want to alarm you, but she just goes over to Tamika and sort of like whispering to her, because, you know, so Whirly and March, you're kind of hovering between the interview room and the rest of the station. So you can kind of see this as well. Key, you're still talking to the kid. Yeah. But yeah, this old woman, this backpacker, is telling something to Tamika. You can make alertness check to eavesdrop without being noticed. Or yeah, you could just budge in if you want to.
I will make an alertness check. Mm-hmm. That is a 21 out of 50.
Okay. With that, I saw someone, this old woman's like, I don't want to alarm anybody, but I saw someone weird out in the trees watching us in the distance. Big guy, really tall. He's just walking around watching us, and I felt really uneasy. And you know, my husband didn't notice, but like I could sure as hell see him. And yeah, I just thought you should know. And I don't think he was wearing anything. It's hard to tell, but like maybe he's wearing something like a lycra. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was just really pale. I don't know. It was just weird. It was disconcerting. So, and Tamika's like, okay, thank you for your report. We'll keep an eye out, and if you feel unsafe, you can come back here, okay? And she's like, all right, but don't worry, we got our bear spray. We'll be fine. She goes back out into the storm.
I will stop her.
Okay. Oh, hello.
Ma'am, I'm Agent Whirly with Fish and Wildlife. Do you think you could point out where you saw that man?
Oh, sure. Yeah. She describes a place that she says is not too far from here. You can give me a navigate or a survival check to understand the old lady's, she's like about 60, her vague instructions based on that tree over there.
And, 25 for navigate, which is 60.
Right. Okay. So she describes like an area south of Devil's Chair. But like, yeah, somewhere between, if you look at the first handle, between Devil's Chair and the Backpackers Campground, somewhere in that area. Yeah. So a couple miles from here.
From, oh no, the weather's awful. I wouldn't, never mind. I'll let March know what I overheard after I let the old woman go. And
I'm going to text, with that information, I'm going to text Kincaid. Okay. And let him know that since the parents are out, that is a perfect time to go put a monitor on the house. Because if we end up letting that kid go back and there's something that has marked him, there's a potential that it could go try to look for him. So it would be nice to have an eye in the area.
Okay. I will mobilize. Yeah. There's enough time to mobilize someone to do that. Thank you. That is a good idea. So, yeah, right now at this point, though, only the satellite phone works. The storm is, you're already in a remote area. The storm is not playing any favors with cell phone reception. So
I'm going to huddle up with Whirly to try and figure out what we want to do. So I've got two concerns. One is I would like to see the parents' reaction to Brandon. I want to know if, and Brandon's reaction to them, I want to know if they seem like they knew each other. Because that's going to very easily narrow down whether we have a copycat or a B kid. And then the other thing is, do we really want to go game hunting? Because it sounds like something's looking for people. We might not have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
If we're going to go mucking around, I want to do it before it gets any worse.
By the way, the big guns are in the vehicle. I would assume not bringing a bunch of fucking
we're not hauling those around.
Okay. At this point, Key, you get to that point in your interview, and you realize you know Brandon needs a little break. Talking to an adult for like an hour is a lot. and at the very slow and careful pace you're doing, not to like, you know how to do this so that the kid doesn't get freaked out, but
mm-hmm.
he's still getting overwhelmed by things. So you give him a break, you get, you know, get him some juice and some animal crackers. And yeah, you meet up with the other two agents. You all share what you know. So yeah, it's late afternoon at this point. Yeah.
I think we should go look before the storm gets any worse.
I think okay. I should stay with the kid while you do that.
I think you should stay with the kid too. Like I said,
that's a good idea.
I want to know if he thinks the parents are his parents, and I want to know if the parents think he's the kid.
Okay. Yeah. He stays behind to wait for the parents to show up. Cause they still may be able to make it. You don't know. Exactly where they are. Their plane landed about 12:30. You did get that from Kincaid. But you know, landing, disembarking, renting a car, and then it's, you know, a three and a half hour trip. That's assuming you don't get lost. Are they going to be able to get to the final road, here? So yeah, March and, Worley, you put on your, you know, raincoats, yeah, well, are you taking the big guns with you, or just
Bring the rifle?
Okay,
I don't want to.
So Marsh, you brought an assault rifle, yeah, modified for burst fire, so you can hide that under a poncho, but the Barrett is not something that can be hid.
That will stay in the car for now.
Okay,
we've just got the rifle in a case, and if anybody asks us, we're government agents. We can do what we want.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you can sling the rifle, put it in the case, and you head out. So yeah, it is storming. It's storming pretty bad, but not bad enough that it won't hamper navigation checks, because you already made one. So give me another navigation check, Worley. As long as you don't. Well, yeah. If you crit fail, that's one thing.
It's a 71 out of 60.
Okay. So it's a regular fail. So you don't find the exact spot she's looking for, but you're in the general area. You can't even, you have something like the trail, the station has lights. You can see them from a distance. You have reservoirs and other. Yeah, sorry.
I'd also like to have borrowed some equipment from the ranger station, if that's all right.
What kind of equipment?
Like big flashlights. Probably like binoculars if they can spare.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, climbing equipment would be. Yeah.
Okay. So
if it's useful in a ranger station, let's just assume we grabbed like one or two.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, they have tons of flashlights and light sources. The two of you can give me alertness checks as you're in the general area.
God damn it. This is a 59 out of 50.
I got a 33 under 70.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Get them.
All right. So, you see a very tall, pale figure in the distance, Agent March. Give me, and you made a critical success. That is not just a tall figure. It's dark, it's storming, but you have frames of references. You have rocks, you have trees. That's not like a 6 foot or a 7 foot guy. That's like a 9 foot guy.
I fucking called it.
Wearing nothing but a loincloth and does not look entirely human.
Maybe not.
And there is something. And it is looking, it is not looking directly at you yet. It is looking at some backpackers that are camping nearby. Yeah, it hasn't spotted you yet, but let's see here. You keep your shit together, but that is 100% not a human.
Okay. I'm not very stealthy. I was not, special forces or nothing, but I'm gonna point it out to Agent Worley, and I'm gonna be like, I think that's our. I hesitate to say guy, but I think that's our guy.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. Agent Worley, give me one more alertness check.
Oh, two.
Yeah, you see it, and Yeah, you also keep your shit together. You are not. You can see it this time. You can see it clearly. It's in view. You wish you had your rifle, but it is standing up and it is walking towards the other backpackers. So you're probably about you're a good ways off. You're probably like a couple of football fields, like you're probably like 600, 700 feet away and behind a little bit of cover. And there's a tent. So imagine 3 points of a triangle. You're at one corner. The giant is on one corner. And then there are backpackers across from you are the other point of the triangle. And it is heading towards the backpacker's tent. So Agent March, Agent Wardley, are you going to do anything as a reaction to it moving?
How are you with that rifle?
Oh, it's guns.
Firearms.
Firearms. Actually pretty good with this firearm.
You will be shooting at a negative 20 because of distance and also lighting conditions. The storm, you know, it's dark, it's storming.
I could probably hit it. But I don't know that that'd be a good idea. Here's my two worries. One, I don't know that just hitting it is going to be a good idea. I don't know how resistant this thing is going to be, the caliber of rifle we have. Two, people go missing and don't really talk about this thing. So that means either it is very successful in its hunts or there is more than one of it.
Well, I don't think it's noticed us yet. Do you want to just maybe get closer to those campers and see what happens?
So as the two of you are talking, it disappears from view.
It just disappears.
It walks behind a tree and then it doesn't. You actually see it a little bit, but it's like, give me another alertness check.
Oh, fuck. Okay, sure. 47 to understand under 70.
Okay.
56 out of 50.
So was that, sorry, was that a fail?
It was a fail.
Okay. I succeeded. She failed. Yeah.
Agent March, you think it seems to be walking through solid objects and then disappears fully into cover. But that's the only way you can describe it as, because you see bits of it sticking through the brush, but like, cool. It's not affecting the brush. The brush isn't being pushed past. It isn't like, it's not solid. It's just it has opacity, but it is like intangible for. At least, yeah, that's the only way that's the only way your brain can process what's happening. And but then it's going fully behind
to shoot it.
Yeah, you'd have to reposition if you're gonna walk. Yeah. If you want to keep watching it.
We gotta move.
I really don't want to watch this, but I think we have to.
We absolutely have to watch this.
Okay. If you want to sneak, give me a stealth. If you want to run and get a fat, you know.
I have stealth at 50. I try and sneak.
Yeah, how do group things work? Can you make
if it, because itself? Of the storm, you'll have a bonus. So if Agent Worley makes a success, then you can follow in her footsteps.
I got a 44 out of 50.
Oh yeah, exactly. So you are both extremely stealthy.
Hell yeah!
Thank God.
So you watch it as it's watching the backpackers. One of them comes out the tent. And, you know, looking for something, you know, for a bit. And then the backpacker's like a middle-aged man. He kind of stops, just stands out in the rain for a moment, and then starts walking towards the trailhead station.
Okay. I think we should just chill, because it seems like he's going to go report whatever it is he just saw. So we'll just, he should come by us. Like, we're on the way to the ranger station.
So yeah, you two can watch. So the backpacker is just marching there. The giant is stalking the figure, or is watching the backpacker march to the station. He is basically following along as the backpacker keeps marching to the station. You two, because you get a critical success, can like bypass it, but you won't be able to keep up with it the entire way. without making another stealth check. So you, because, you know, you're, you know, a couple miles away from the station at this point. So, there's, it would be very hard for you to stay concealed from the giant and watch the backpacker march that direction. Yeah. You can either wait for it to leave and go check on the other backpacker, cause you think there's another person in the tent, or, in fact, you can stay behind and see if something happens. You do see someone rustling around in that tent, or you can make another stealth check and follow the backpacker, or you can do something else. Yeah.
So the giant is currently following the backpacker.
Yeah. The backpacker that's acting like, both of you can give me human checks.
Oh boy. Okay.
All right, we're real good at this. Ready?
46 out of 10.
Okay, yeah.
69 out of 10.
All right, yeah. The backpacker's nice. Just marching in the, yeah, just marching out.
Having a real normal one.
Yeah.
So you're better at stealth. Do you want to trail the giant trailing the guy, or do you want to go check the tent? Because I think we should split up.
I also think we should split up, and I will trail the giant.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll go check the tent then.
Okay.
Do you want the gun?
Yes, please.
Well, I think you can both have handguns. But yeah, if you
want the rifle, we both have guns. We're talking about the rifle.
I can get
the rifle. All right. So, Agent March, you see a woman pop out of the tent and be like, Babe, what? She looks very confused. Bill?
I'm going to give my standard. I'm a government official. Okay. Be like, hey, I'm a government official. My name is Agent March. I'm here on behalf of the FBI.
Is something wrong?
Not a big thing. We're investigating suspicious activity in the area. I just passed by your husband. We had a small chat. He's on the way to the ranger station.
Oh, okay. Did he tell you about the weirdo he saw?
That's exactly what I want to ask you about. We've got reports of suspicious people in the area, and I want to check on you and make sure you're safe.
Yeah, Bill said he saw somebody watching us in the distance, like a big guy who wasn't wearing a shirt, and he was going to go tell him off. And Bill's going to the station? Why wouldn't he tell me? That's weird. Bill's usually very good about
that. Storm. Maybe he said something and, you know, just got caught in the wind.
All right, yeah, roll persuade. I'll give you plus 20 bonus.
All right. Cover store. I got a 38, so with the plus 20, that should work. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Under 68.
Yeah, she's all right. You've soothed her anxieties. Everything's fine. She's not gonna go look out for Bill. We'll tell him to come back. Okay. You know, I got. Should we go to the station? Should I go to the station too?
Love for you to head to the station.
Okay.
Stay on the trail. Nothing bad should happen to you. There's a fish and wildlife officer. You might run into her.
Okay.
Just head back to the ranger station. Just let him know what's going
on. Oh my, this sounds scary. Is it a serial killer? I've been listening to all
the true crime podcasts. No, not a serial killer. There's just, you ever heard of those cult communes?
Well, yeah. Is there one out here? Oh, no.
Yeah, there's a couple of odd people out here. We're going to go put a lid on it real quick.
Oh, okay.
What do you say when you deals with something? Mm-hmm. There's nothing to worry about. Just let the people down at the station know. I'm going to do a little bit of poking around. Is that all right?
Yeah.
You mind if I check some of your things that are laying out here? Is that okay? I just want to see if they've, you know, been ruffling through them or not.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's that. You know, she points out they're... Yeah, they're like moderately experienced, you know, outdoors people. So they have a pretty sizable amount of camping gear and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could poke around in that for a little bit. So, Agent Worley, you did you make your second stealth check, or do you need to make it?
It is a 58 out of 50.
That is a failure. So
it sure is.
All right. Let's see here. Well, you make some noise. Okay. Well, it seems like the storm is helping you a little bit. They continue on their course, even though you break some branches going through the underbrush. So they are, but yeah, the giant, give me another alertness check with a negative 20.
That is a 75 out of 30.
Well, you've lost sight of the giant. The backpacker, Bill, is definitely not possible to miss him. Just walking a straight line towards the trail station. So,
Is he? Okay, here's an important question. Mm-hmm. Is he following the trail or is he just walking straight?
Straight.
Okay.
Climbing over rocks when he has to.
That's not super typical, but I guess I will just keep following him and see what happens.
So you've lost sight of the giant. You see the backpacker. What do you want to do?
I'm just going to keep following that backpacker and see what happens.
Okay. So you watch him for a bit, and he goes straight to the station. So meanwhile, Agent Key, you are in the station. Another backpacker comes in, you know, talks to agent or one of the park ranger, Doug, the one in charge of the station. He's an older man. He seems quite agitated. You can either alertness to eavesdrop in on their conversation or you can budge in.
Let's go ahead and do an alertness.
All right.
I will go ahead and roll that. That's a 78 out of 40.
Okay. So yeah, he seems quite agitated. He gives a report. Doug takes the report and seems a bit concerned and starts writing up a little report about it. But otherwise, nothing happens.
Okay.
Until a man comes in who is absolutely soaking wet. You can give me a human check.
That is a 58 out of 60. So just barely made it.
Okay, this guy is acting quite weird. He's staring straight ahead. He's not blinking much. Also, his coat has a hood on it and he did not pull it up. So he is absolutely drenched from the water. And he looks ahead and starts walking past the front desk. He is just turning around, looking at everyone, and a park ranger, Tamika, says, "Hello, sir, can we help you?" And he just tries to push past Tamika.
This concludes part one of Sentinels of Twilight. Please subscribe to this channel so you can be the first to find out what the camper is up to in this conclusion. Can the three agents survive the night? What happened to Brandon McGill? Who was the mysterious giant in the shadows? All of these questions and more will be answered in part two, so stay tuned to Delta Green Killing Field.